Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, school lunches haven't always had the reputation of being healthy or sometimes not tasting good, but I think that's really changing a lot and has changed a lot for many, many school districts. Our first guest is one of those people working to make school lunches healthy and delicious, Chef Josh Perkins. Back with us again, regional executive chef for Chartwell's K-12 North Central Region. And he oversees a lot. There's 70 school districts in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois, and also Indiana, as a matter of fact. And at one of those school districts in Wisconsin, they're using hydroponics to grow fresh greens they use in their cafeterias. So, are you familiar with the Gardens to School program? Has it affected your school? What questions do you have about maybe how hydroponics are used or about school lunches? Love to hear from you. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Chef Josh Perkins, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks. Good to be back.
You know, before we start talking about the hydroponics and that sort of thing, let's talk about Chartwell's K-12. What's that all about?
Sure. Well, Chartwell's K-12 is one sector of Compass Group. Large diversity of ways to satisfy dining solutions, corporate dining. K-12 is as the name suggests, the K-12, kindergarten through 12th grade division of school food service. So we partner with districts all over the country, including the states that you mentioned and beyond, to bring great meals to students. As you know, you've talked about the scope of it. I worked with a team of six other chefs. As you said, you know, getting in there and making sure that the meals are constantly elevating, delicious. I think you made a really important point there. Delicious, yeah, and healthy
delicious.
Have to be linked.
Yeah.
So we're making sure they're always delicious and looking for ways to you know, bring more options to students and more healthy options to students.
So you're the regional executive chef, so you probably travel around quite a bit or get around quite a bit.
I do, yeah. There are some states in the South that I'm covering now too, which is actually been just the last year, and that's been great. But because my home is here in Madison, you know, home is always going to feel like that core of Midwestern states. But yes, I travel quite a bit. Sometimes there's just no substitution for that face-to-face time, both with the people who are cooking in our schools and students. That's a very important part of my job, in my opinion. I'm always making the effort to talk to students about how good a job we're doing or if they want to see changes.
So you've partnered with schools and local community gardeners to bring community gardens to schools. Explain how that got going and how it works.
Well, it's a personal project of mine. It's all of our chefs, I think, have some degree of involvement with this. I came to the job with a strong interest in this, not only from my work with the Homegrown Snack Group here in Madison. That was a volunteer group connecting local farmers with our schools. But kind of my professional background as a chef, again, who had been involved heavily in Madison's very strong, as I think all listeners will know, local purchasing scene for the best in the restaurant. So I kind of came from that perspective. And when I came into school food, I knew not only from that professional experience, but as a parent and my own personal experience, I have a son who's a picky eater, except if he's involved in some way in the production of this food, whether it be fishing or gardening. I said, you know, this is a linchpin to getting students more interested in foods they haven't tried or foods that they may think of as, you know, that finger wagging, you should eat this food, fruits and vegetables. And so when I came in, I was delighted to find out that Chartwell's had developed a platform and a resource kit to allow schools who might be in the position of having a garden but not being sure how to connect the garden with the meal programs, how we can do that in a safe way that results in the best of cases, student involvement on the side of planning and planting the garden, and then bringing that into nutritional outreach efforts in the classroom and cafeterias, and then ultimately into the meal programs. And that's happening on a grand scale at Menasha.
That's really something. And it's Is it not just the garden at the school, but are there other outside farmers, for example, providing food as well?
There are. We have one of the priorities for our procurement arm, and that's, you know, we're talking about kind of two ways of getting produce. As we get into the Menasha discussion, we'll talk about on-site gardening and how that produces food for the cafeteria and the meals in the school. But then there's buying produce, you know, standard sort of you buy it from a produce distributor and the truck arrives with your produce. One of our priorities has been to make it easy for our directors when they're placing those orders to find out what is available locally. And we can work with those produce vendors to say, can you tell me more about this? I can see the farm name. If that person is not familiar with the farm, just from a local frame of reference, finding out more about it. All our produce vendors know that that's a priority for us. And I will say that many of them do a really excellent job getting that information in front of us without us having to dig it. Again, we kind of talked about this. We were talking just before we got on air. This is such a priority now. It's such an important thing for so many people that I think the produce distributors are aware of that and getting that information out to our schools.
What about setting up gardens? Have you worked with the schools then about setting their gardens up and so forth?
Yes. I've worked with I'll call out a couple of organizations that we've worked with, and one is Fork Farms, the Appleton-based organization, specialists in hydroponic technology who have supplied Menasha. And then I've also worked with Big Green, which is an organization that has kind of been part of getting learning gardens, a very sort of turnkey, sophisticated solution to doing learning gardens that are intended to be woven into the curriculum. And then where possible, where the volume and the interest indicates, we get these in the meal programs. And that's been – I've done a lot of work in the Indiana market with dietitians, our regional dietitian and local dietitians there to foster these programs. So sometimes, you know, as I was referring to, we have a broad base of clients, and some clients might have a garden that's already in progress and we're just taking it to the next step. And sometimes we're doing that from square one.
So, yeah. As you think, you've been doing this a while now.
Yes.
What kind of results are you seeing from the schools on this, and what successes have you seen?
The biggest success is, you know, I kind of touched on it in just a moment ago. The biggest success is that when you think about gardening and agriculture, you are talking about a set of skills and knowledge that can, in a very practical way, be related to almost any area of school curriculum that you would choose. And so this is an area where I think we are dovetailing really well with teachers who need to use that precious instructional time to get the best to their students. And a school garden can be tailored to almost any aspect of the curriculum, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The students, I think, again, you know, what we see is that students take an interest in not only maybe fruits and vegetables they haven't tried before or don't make a regular habit of eating, but some of the stuff that I've really enjoyed that we do is talking about heirloom varieties, getting them in touch with those crops that might not be as on the beaten track, but might be something that you could relate to. Your grandparents might have been growing this in their garden, and you might not be familiar with it, but let me show you what it is, you know, how it looks and how it tastes. And then from there, it becomes – you know, in my opinion, what they see is that they have a very personal connection to that produce. And so when they see it in a meal program, they feel that connection, and it's easier for them to, I think, accept if they're not naturally inclined to. They say, that's kind of part of what I do in my school day, or I might even have planted this and helped with it.
Yeah, that ownership has got to make a big difference.
It does.
Talking today with Chef Josh Perkins, Regional Executive Chef, supporting Chartwell's K-12 North Central Region. Works a lot in Wisconsin school districts as well. And we're going to be talking with him about Menasha because they have a hydroponics program going there. But you may have questions as well about farm to lunch, using hydroponics or just gardening in general. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Have you tried it in your district, in your school district? What have been the challenges? Look forward to hearing from you. Again, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. So it's changed menus, school menus.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do, what I think has been most effective, is to say, I'll give you an example from Menasha. It's not unusual at all for us to feature some kind of leafy green as part of a salad bar, and we offer fresh fruits and vegetables with every meal, and we'll usually do that in a setup where there's a variety of them presented to the students. So where you might have a leafy green, again, we're talking about if it's commercially bought produce, it might be a straight romaine or a leaf lettuce or spinach. Menasha is growing a blend of four hydroponic greens, four lettuces, a couple of incised and a couple of sweet varieties developed specifically for hydroponics. And so while the menu, if you read the menu, you might see mixed greens. That doesn't mean one thing. So in Menasha, you're seeing a blend of there. I have to mention, you know, in addition to the great flavor that comes from that local harvest and control and the recentness of that harvest, they're gorgeous, you know, just to the eye. So what we look to do to extend the availability and the presence of these greens, in this case for Menasha, that's the real focus. And in my work with schools, I've been promoting the idea to make sure that we're able to consistently feature this, to focus on something that is going to be really a great solution and practical for their school, and focus on a crop that they can feature consistently. So you might see mixed green salad. The menu might read the same, but you're seeing something drastically different if you have this freshness. Yeah.
Well, the whole business about hydroponics – there was some involvement with a hydroponics company in the Menasha area. What was there not?
That's right, Fork Farm.
Fork Farm. How did that all develop?
So because Menasha is just in that whole confluence of Fox Valley municipalities that Appleton is included in. Essentially, if I remember my history of Fork Farm right, and Fork Farm actually does have the sort of history of this entire partnership told from their side on their website. I think they were founded in 2010, and then right around 2017, 2018, the business manager at Menasha, Brian Adesso, had this very ambitious vision for what he wanted Menasha School District to be doing in terms of providing fresh and high-quality produce grown on site to the students there. So I believe that the conversation kind of went that Fork Farm was right in the area. It was kind of in the air. It was the natural choice. I think Brian got in touch with them and said, we'd like to plan a project. And that project kind of started in 2018 with a smaller number of towers. That actually the project tripled in size over the summer of 2019. And we kind of opened up with a new location and tripled the number of towers in fall of 2019.
So, what do you mean by towers?
So, towers are, and I should mention here too, if you saw the website for the show we're on, your show, you will have seen a photo that includes the flood tables and the grow lights for where the seed is started in Menasha. And behind the flood tables are photos of the towers, which are not seated in the photo, but there are many more photos on the Fork Farm website. But these towers, essentially, great design, so you can fold these out, and they're standing towers with I will call them baskets, seed baskets, after the produce has been seeded and placed in the towers, and they grow this way with incredible energy and water efficiency. They're great. Again, there are great stats on the Fork Farm website about how much hydroponics can save you in energy and water costs. And so, in my opinion, this kind of thing really is a signifier of what you're going to see in future when people are looking at resources they need to conserve really carefully.
Yeah.
And Menasha's project is very ambitious. We have a goal this October for the high school of replacing all commercially bought greens with Menasha grown greens.
Wow. Mary is from Appleton. Let's go there. Mary, hello.
Hi, I'm just so grateful that you're having this program today. This is just awesome news to hear that you're getting fresh greens into the hands of these young kids. I just can't say enough. And the question that I had was really, how can we go about getting this into more schools? And I think you kind of answered my question about Fork Farms. I was wondering, you know, more about that company and how they were involved in this, and I think you just spoke to that. So I just want to say thank you for, you know, being a part of something so innovative to help these kids learn how to eat healthier. I just wanted to make that comment.
Mary, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mary. And you're right. I would start with Fork Farm because they're right in your area. And I know from having read over their stories how proud they are of being involved in schools in a broader area than the Fox Valley. So I'm sure they'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. Talking today with Chef Josh Perkins, who's the regional executive chef supporting Chartwell's K-12 North Central region, and zeroing in a little bit on Menasha and that district and talking about their hydroponics program. But we're talking school lunches in general as well. And I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at farm to lunchroom in the K-12 schools across Wisconsin. Many districts, not only in Wisconsin but elsewhere, are trying to do more of that, where they're raising their own garden, having their own gardens, and raising vegetables that they can use in their school lunch programs. Menasha is kind of, you know, we're sort of focusing a little on it because they have started a hydroponics program for their greens, and it has proven to be pretty successful so far. I hope you'll join in with your own questions. Is your school growing some of its own food? Do you have, you think school lunches can be improved in your area? What questions do you have about hydroponics? Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jeff in Superior has something for us. Let's go there. Jeff, hi.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I wanted to share my own thoughts. I don't have kids in school, but I know that when I was a young man, young age, I loved beets and I loved squash, and I wish they served that in school more. Is there any way you can incorporate that? Because often kids don't get what they want, even though they would eat it if it was there.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. We definitely do, and I had the same experience that really resonates with the experience that I had and have had not only in Chartwell's but in the homegrown snack group. One of the things that we feel is really important to this effort is to sample these out before they actually show up in a meal program, so that a student who might not have had the chance to try, whether it was, for example, a squash salad that might involve shaved raw squash or a different preparation than they might have been used to, they don't have to try to make that high stakes choice about what to have for lunch at the moment that they first encounter this. And so the sampling table helps them do that. We're able to give them one or two bites, and when they respond well to something, beets or squash, in the example you're giving, maybe a different preparation that we've tried to use to add flavor or texture and make it more appealing. If they say, oh, this is actually really good, and we'll get that comment, wow, I actually really like this, then our follow-up is, did you know that we're going to have it on the menu next Monday and Tuesday or all of next week? And sometimes the answer is yes, and sometimes it's no, but it gives us the opportunity to say, okay, so here we are right now, and you don't have to decide if you're having it for lunch and then find out that if you don't care for it, you know, you're half a lunch down. You can say, I really actually like this, and I'll say, try it next Monday. You know, it'll be on the salad bar.
I love that sampling table idea. Just letting kids try a bite or two beforehand is well, it makes so much sense. You wonder why it isn't done more often.
It's very right. It's a very high stakes proposition for a student who's generally under heavy time constraints. And it's a high stakes choice. I need to choose lunch and I need to do it quickly, often. You know, they want to, some of it is, you know, the fact that they've got a busy school day, and some of it is just wanting to get back into interactions with friends. They don't want to take a long time. And that can guide students into a pattern where they might not see everything that's offered on the salad bar. And that's what the sampling table allows us to do.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Shaney in New Richmond, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I want to thank you guys so much for what you're doing. Thank you so very much. I have a question for you regarding, I know that, I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say on the radio, but I'll just say agri companies. I know that agri companies have, with genetically modified seeds, they've bought over a lot of seed companies, and so this has become extremely difficult to find heirloom seeds and other seeds that haven't been genetically altered or tainted. And I'm wondering, is that hard for you to do and to find these seeds to incorporate them into this beautiful program that you have?
Great topic. I as far as heirloom seeds are concerned, like I was saying, it was a wonderful thing for us to discuss with the school kids who were coming through and maybe certainly knew what a corn plant looked like from having driven back and forth to school, but didn't know that there were so many varieties of corn. My experience has actually been that it's not at all difficult to find heirloom seeds. There's a lot of interest out there from gardeners on all scales, include all the way from home gardeners to market gardeners. What I did in some of those cases where I was getting heirloom seeds in front of students was just type in heirloom seeds into a search engine, you know, of your preference, and you're going to come up with some seed houses who have made a decision to either specialize or feature these seeds for sure. And from there, you can really, if you find it interesting, as I do, you can really go down the rabbit hole and find out where was this hybrid developed. At what, you know, it's in some cases these were passed down from generation to generation, literally saved in cabinets, dried out, and in some cases they're some of what are hybrids were developed in universities for specific purposes, and then kind of for one reason or another fell out of the mainstream seed production, but. I think if you start there, then you are definitely going to find some seed houses that can help you out.
Places like Seed Savers Exchange, Decorah, Iowa.
Great call out.
Would be one. But thank you so much for calling, Shaney. Appreciate it. Let's take another call here. We've got Keith in Forest County. Hi, Keith.
Good morning, and good morning to your guest, Larry. Marvelous program. I'm in Forest County, but I summer in Wisconsin. I'm on the school board in a little community, Port Townsend in the state of Washington. We're a school system of about 1,200 students. And I just wanted to make a couple of points and indicate to you what successes we've had with locally grown options, both both grains and meat production within the area. Almost 60% of the food that our students consume is grown locally, either by them or by purveyors within the community area. But my main point, I wanted to give you an example of how we tied some of this to some of the curricular areas within the grade school. Our grade school kids were concerned by how much food and waste was occurring every lunch hour. So they set up a huge tarp in the parking lot and put all of the waste from 1 week in that, and they broke it down by type and by quantity and did a research project on this. And what they found were two very interesting things. One was that something called special salads, which was a euphemism for the salads that the teachers ate, was the biggest individual item that was being thrown away each week. The second one was half full cartons of milk. Kids were required to take milk with their lunch, and most kids didn't drink all of their milk. What they did then was propose to us on the school board that we stop buying cartons of milk and, in fact, get a milk dispenser, which used much less milk, did not have paper and plastic wastes, and was much more cost-effective for all of us as well in the community.
Oh, some good ideas there, Chef Josh.
Yeah, I love this story, and I really appreciate that you shared it. Larry was talking earlier in the program about ownership, and what that will do for students. And this is a shining example of that. It sounds like the students took, you know, a very direct involvement in analyzing this. And I think one of the most important things with waste control, wasting food is such a personal topic. I don't think anybody, you know, doesn't have some emotions attached to wasting food, but it can become an overwhelming topic when it's just, it's not specific. And it sounds like they did a fantastic job digging in and saying, where are the areas we can really affect this? And so my compliments to you and your district.
Yeah, Keith, doing a good job there. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, I've served on school boards, and so cost always comes into the picture when you're talking about any aspect of the school. How do we do this in the best way possible? What about costs associated? Is it more expensive to do it this way?
It is not, at least by the testimony that I gathered from, again, Brian Odesso, the business manager there. That was one of the goals of the program at the outset, is to make sure that it was not only sustainable in an ecological sense and a step forward in that way, but that it was sustainable from the business angle. And I think that is important for any school district who's considering embarking on a project like this, is to do a cost analysis to make sure that the program will last over time. One of the things that happens unavoidably as a result of reducing your carbon footprint and bringing control, we're taking greens as our example in Menasha's case, is to achieve not only better quality, shelf life, consistency, control on all those factors, but also control over the variable costs of transport in the market. There is no transportation cost for the Menasha green source. And so if weather or fuel prices or all of those things are playing a part in the rest of the produce market, they remain constants for a school district who is able to scale this up. And I think that is one of the reasons why cost can really be a practical factor in taking on a program like this.
Yeah. So looking at Menasha, what's that school district there? How many kids or children are being served roughly in this way?
So the number that I was really discussing earlier in the week with Brian and Sue was I had asked how many students at this high school, where we have the goal to get the greens, the wholesale, changed out from commercially bought to in-house greens, is about 900 students a day. So eating, that's at the high school level. I have to admit I don't know the total enrollment across all grade levels, but this is the number. You know, all of these students in Menasha are able to access this on a daily basis, and that's the number of students would be eating from the meal program. Where as of October, we have this complete switch over to Menasha grown produce.
And okay, winter comes. Still works in the wintertime? Do costs go up, or is it more difficult in a situation where you have less sun and longer nights and so forth?
We've seen no indications that this is an issue, especially because we're doing this indoors. It's a hydroponic situation. So whereas I think those factors and a shorter growing season or a shorter period of sunlight during the day would certainly affect a traditional garden. And I will say, I think in my experience, Midwestern gardeners and growers have been extremely resourceful in extending their season and getting around that. But for Menasha, and I'm doing a little bit of general speculating here, obviously the cost of heating an indoor environment go up in the wintertime, but this farm is really executed within those walls at Menasha. So no, I don't think, other than general utility costs that would change with the season, that it will increase in cost.
What is the, a system like this requires some knowledge and someone to kind of oversee it. Is there a person who is kind of in charge of that, or how does that work?
Yes, Sue Malesa, our director of Menasha. She has been, I've worked with Sue ever since I started with Charwell's 4.5 years ago, and incredibly driven director. I don't think she allows herself to rest for very long, being satisfied with what the program is doing and wanting to push it forward. She and Brian are very much cut from the same cloth in that way, wanting Menasha to always be sort of pushing the envelope and taking the next step to say, this is what a school program should look like. This is what we want it to look like. And and not thinking of limitations but possibilities. Mm-hmm. So Sue worked not only with Brian and with Fork Farm to talk about the parameters of the program, what needed to happen to get it in place, but also because it's a specialized program, because it is hydroponic, making sure that all the protocols, standard procedures that needed to be in place for food safety, harvesting, again, that's an area where they're forging ahead, seeing the difference in quality and methods of harvest and storage that improve the shelf life, the freshness of all these. They've been developing these, which will then allow that knowledge to spread throughout Chartwells for schools who want to make that jump next after Menasha.
It's an amazing thing. Do the children themselves get involved in any way with, I don't know, planting the seeds or whatever?
At Menasha specifically or overall?
Menasha specifically for the hydroponics. And we could talk overall.
Yeah. So definitely because we have so many different kinds of partnerships with clients in their school garden programs. For example, I mentioned Big Green and the learning gardens. That is absolutely an integral feature of those. To my knowledge, at Menasha right now, the program has been managed by Deb Grossinger, the one of Sue's assistants. And I think that the actual execution of the towers, the planning, the planting, the harvesting is being done by our personnel and not students at this time. But absolutely, in some cases where we have a school staff who really wants to be able to get that involved in the classroom, students then have a direct involvement with planting and in some cases harvesting that produce too.
And I could see that it could well be developed into their coursework. I'm thinking about biology, plant biology as an example.
Yeah, biology, science and biology specifically would be a natural starting place. To me, you can get then from there, it just depends on your imagination. You can get into design, teaching design, applied mathematics. You know, how do we get you brought that up, the special system that Fork Farm has developed. You know, it's not the only hydroponic system, but their technology is specific to them. How did they design this? You could have a class be put in that same position of saying, this is what I want to achieve with a design, and how did they get there? How do I get there? Or a different procedure. So
I could see the math side of it too, where if figuring out the amount of plants and the number of students and how to keep that going through the course of the year, there'd be a lot of opportunities there. For
anything
sure.
you want, business education.
Yeah,
if you want to talk
sure.
about it, we've been talking about that. How do you make sure this is something that's practical for you fiscally over the long run?
Yeah,
yeah.
Lots to go there. John in Middleton, we'll give you a chance now. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I think these programs sound really nice. Sounds like you're going to the Whole Foods with the veggies and teaching the kids about it and maybe showing them how to grow it and then bring it into the table. I'm just wondering kind of on the other parts of the meal, like with the chicken strips or, you know, the chicken nuggets. I know some of them have like over 35 ingredients. I'm just wondering kind of what's in that stuff. I'm just wondering, you know, if we're looking at just Whole Foods with the veggie side, how about cleaning up some of the other parts of the meal?
Thanks, John. Yeah, so one of my aims and one of my responsibilities as executive chef is to be doing culinary training that is squarely aimed at making sure that our staff have the skills to do things like do a protein, a recipe that features protein that might even be plant-based, or use a cut of chicken. Again, I'm just going to take a little sidetrack here and talk about Menasha also has a rotisserie program. So that's a situation where they, you know, we worked intensively on that too, where we were able to take a whole chicken. I mean, it's a chicken. Mm-hmm. There's nothing added to it, and develop a brine, a set of seasonings that we use, and then roast it in the Menasha rotisserie and feature that across a broad variety of items. So that's one example that kind of, I think, gets at what you're asking. Not everybody has a rotisserie program. So across other schools, that is a big part of my culinary training, is to make sure that our staff is equipped with the skills to be able to say, let's take a protein, whether it's an animal protein or a plant protein, get the recipe done correctly, get it done safely, and again, deliciously, so that students are relating to it. But
yeah, for sure. John, does that help?
Yeah, I think that kind of answers the question. I know, you know, it sounds like that school district you're talking about has a lot of really good programs. I know some places, you know, in the Dan County here, it just kind of, it seems like they grab something out of a bag, you know, a piece of cheese pizza and warms it up. And I just kind of wonder, you know, what the kids are getting on a day in and day out basis.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're always working to make sure, you know, students are getting something that they, you know, really, really like. That's kind of the most important thing, is that they like the flavor of it, and then making sure that that product is as good as it possibly can be, and making sure that we're, you know, that call for clean food, it's everywhere now, and we've heard it loud and clear, and that is a big part of my culinary training, is we're trying to put together items from scratch as much as we possibly can, and make sure that the staff are equipped to do that, and that tends to make products cleaner by definition, making them from scratch.
What advice do you have for districts that want to incorporate the gardens or maybe the hydroponics into their school lunches?
I think the first thing to think about, it kind of depends if you're at the planning stages of, you know, we don't have a garden, but we think we have the spot. School districts can be anywhere on a spectrum, from we think we have some ground that we're not going to use, so could we break ground and do a garden, to we have one, but it's not really being fully used the way we'd like to. And the first thing I think to think about is just getting together a kit, and I'm talking about a kit of documents. Let's get this all in writing. What is our plan to buy seed, to plant? Who will be responsible for taking care of all this? I can't really overemphasize that factor.
Yeah.
It's not a casual project. Gardens take time. They take knowledge. They take commitment. And so writing all this out and trying to come up with a plan, maybe from day one to the end of year one, and saying, where do we want to be? I mean, this is kind of standard business plan,
yeah,
you know, in a way. But to just say it's a great vision, and nobody could argue, I think, with the impact that it has on students being positive, but being able to sketch it all out so you can say at the end of year one, let's check against this and see, do we get where we wanted to? What's year two look like? And make sure you have adequate resources. I think a plan for planting, harvesting, washing, training, safety. Who are your leads? You know, who are your key people? And making sure all that's in place before you even do the first thing, if you have that opportunity.
And boy, it sounds really wonderful. Chartwell, what's your website? You know, I'm sure people are listening in and thinking, "Gosh, I'd like to know a little more about this outfit, this organization."
Oh yeah, if you search Chartwell's K-12, it'll pull it up. Again, we're part of Compass Group, but you'll pull up the Chartwell's website.
Chartwell's K-12.
Yep.
Yeah, I tell you what, this has been really fascinating to me, Josh. It's great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry.
I'm always kind of renewed, and my enthusiasm is always renewed about school lunch programs when I talk with you.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. Thanks for having me on.
Chef Josh Perkins is the regional executive chef. He supports Chartwell's K-12's North Central region. It was really a lot of fun learning about, and I bet that the Menasha School District, there may be something on their website about their hydroponics program as well. If not, the hydroponics organization they worked with again was?
It's Fork Farm, and they definitely have the Menasha Partnership story on their website.
Fork Farm.
Yep.
Okay. We will have Chef Josh back, and we will talk with him again. But we're kind of going to go next to the other end of the spectrum and take a look at what our food was like at the turn of you know, about 1896, 1890, and in there, what the food that you and I, well, not you and I, perhaps, we're not that old, but what people in this country were eating and what was in the foods that, a lot of the foods that people were eating at that time. And it's a book called The Poison Squad, and its subtitle is One Chemist's Single-Minded Crusade for Food Safety at the Turn of the 20th Century. Our guest, Deborah Blum, coming up next on the Ideas Network.